Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Hey, Reg. What's going on, man? You ready to do a little podcast recording today, my friend? Cool. All right, then let's do this thing. I will give you the three S's. I'll give you the countdown. You give me the music, and then we'll do episode 432. 432. All right. You set? Cool. Here we go. Star, smile strong, and 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Don't forget, listening is important, but getting out there and spreading the word don't hurt either. So get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And by gosh, it should be theirs too. Of course, if you like what you hear yourself, we've already got a captive audience. But sometimes, you know, you get a little busy, you forget to listen, or maybe you're a newer listener, or maybe you're a longtime listener who just wants to hear some reruns. I love reruns. That's mostly what I watch on television, are old reruns. If you're a rerun lover like I am, we've got them for you here. Go to WGNradio.com, go to the podcast section. Hit the prompt for this podcast, and my God, you can load and scroll down. Tons and tons of podcasts. Heck, we've been doing this since May of 2016. This is episode 432. So, here we are. It's Labor Day, at least when this podcast will be posting on Monday, September 2nd. Labor Day, traditionally the end of summer, as it had been traditionally known for a number of reasons, not just because it was September. Now, once again, if you're a longtime listener to the podcast, you know that I base the seasons on the meteorological calendar. I know there's the other calendar about the solstice. It's usually about the 20th or 21st of the month when we transition into another season. But I like things neat and orderly. And to me, the meteorological calendar works much better because it's on the first of a month and it just makes sense. It's January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December. So, for instance, it's like September 1st. Well, you know what? Now that I say that, I believe September 1st. So, no, that doesn't make sense, does it? No, maybe it's... Yeah, no, that's right. I'm wrong. That's right, I'm wrong. That's right, I'm wrong. No. So the meteorological calendar in terms of the seasons, let me get this right now because I live and die by this, right? At least that's what you'd think. And so let me make sure that I'm correct. My main point is it doesn't start on the 20th. It starts on the first of every month when it happens. So, for instance, boy, I'm actually online now looking at this. So, we always have those equinoxes, right? Yeah. The meteorological starts, like, for instance, okay, yeah, oh, that's what I thought now, so, yeah, I'm wrong. It's not January through. It's, so let's start at the beginning, for instance. Spring, just because it's the beginning of the year, starts March 1st, and then it's March, April, May. Then summer, right? Summer, warm weather, June 1st through the end of August. Meteorological fall then begins September 1st, September, October, November, and then we have winter, of course, starting in December and January and February. But it's always the first of those months, as opposed to these 21sts and 22nds, and it's around there, and it's boop, boop, boop. You know, I like order. I do lists. You know that about me. I like lists, and this makes sense to me. Spring, March 1st. That makes sense. March, you know, we start to see, you know, buds popping up on different flowers and things like that. March, April, May. That makes sense for spring, because we think of summer as June, July, and August. Well, June 1st is meteorological summer. And then meteorological fall is September, October, November, which makes sense. It's fall, November, Thanksgiving time, right? And then winter, December 1st. We think of winter as being December, not, you know, by Christmas time, it's already been winter by the 21st or 22nd of December. We've already had winter weather. So I'm liking the meteorological seasons. I like those. So as far as I'm concerned, it's September 2nd. Happy fall. It's fall. Now, part of what I want to talk about today is what we think of as fall doesn't really happen much anymore as like it used to. And a number of reasons, not only weather-wise, but school-wise. September was always back to school. It was September. It was traditionally the day after Labor Day. Labor Day was the official end of summer. That's the way it was. It was that last holiday, you know, get that Monday off, and school usually started on the day after Labor Day. And it was like that for years. And years, certainly in grammar school, at least when I was going to school. Back in my day, we didn't start school in August when it was hot and it was still summer according to every kind of seasonal calendar, whether it is the equinox calendar or the meteorological calendar. August is summer. Right, it's still hot. Here in Chicago, it certainly was. The last couple of days of August, we broke records. Near 100, and the heat indices were 105 and 115. It was crazy. So let me start off by saying, first of all, happy fall. It's September 2nd. It's meteorological autumn. It's meteorological fall. Happy fall. Now, I've said to you many times, fall is my favorite season. I like cooler weather. I couldn't stand. I mean, we had in Chicago this summer, we had more 90 degree days than we usually do, above the average, and it felt like it. So not a fan of the big hot weather. I know some people are. I never have been, really. Just a little too hot for me. I love the fall. I love wearing a hoodie or a sweatshirt. I love the crisp air. I love the blue skies without the haze. A perfect day outside is like 68, 65 degrees, maybe 70. I'll give you that. But if I'm liking that autumn chill, I'm liking a 65. Yeah, I'm digging that with the sun out and the blue skies. Oh, can't you picture it? I can, and it's coming. It's coming. Not as quickly as it used to come. But what I've noticed, and I don't have any kids, and so this whole idea of the when does school start and back to school and get your supplies and get your clothes and get your shoes and all that other stuff never was a part of my reality. Didn't have that. So for those of you who do have children or have had children and now they're grown up, whether you have them currently or and they're going to school or you just remember back over the last 20 or 30 years, this might not be as unfamiliar to you because you were used to all of a sudden finding out that school is starting on August 15th or August 20th. Many weeks before the usual and traditional start of school, the day after Labor Day. Not sure why it happened. I do remember in high school, we started in late August, but it was late August. I mean, the reason I'm bringing this up is because I've been talking to some friends who have young kids still in grade school. And I think the Chicago Public Schools started in late August, in the 20s at least, in the mid-August 20-somethings. But I've known some people who went back to school in the teens, in the August 15th, 16th, or 17th kind of thing. And when I asked, when did the kids get out of school? I figured, well, maybe they got out in May. I was told that, no, they got out in June, in early to mid-June. So it was almost just a two-month summer vacation rather than the traditional three. We used to get out, I remember, in late May. Once again, we have these days, you know, Memorial Day was kind of the official beginning of summer. A lot of times you would get out just after Memorial Day or just before Memorial Day, but we certainly would not go back until after Labor Day. So we used to get a full 3 months, pretty close to it at least. But now I'm hearing that many schools are getting out later and starting earlier. And I wonder how that affects everybody. Now, I'll be honest with you. As much as I remember those dates, I say, well, maybe that's maybe crazy. And thinking back, 3 months off was a lot. I do remember by the middle of August, I was tired of my friends, seeing them every day, trying to figure out what to do every day to fill the time. You almost felt an obligation to do something because you were off from school. But I mean, in my world, I don't know how much baseball I could play or how much bike riding I could do or whatever it was, the types of things we were mostly kind of sports oriented. And I remember by mid-August going, I'm looking forward to go back to school. So maybe it isn't all that bad. Maybe they've decided or figured it out that, you know, by the time it gets to be mid-August, kids are getting a little restless and a little tired of, 3 months might be a little too much to get away from learning and keeping their mind stimulated in terms of learning. So maybe there is some official, reason for this. But yeah, you know, now that I think about it, as much as I say, in my day, we used to get 3 months off and we liked it. We loved it. Well, I don't know now. Now that I think about it, I do remember going, geez, I can't wait to get back to school to see some different people and do some different things and actually do maybe, and maybe I missed reading and math. and science, as much as crazy as that sounds. I always liked school. I enjoyed school, so it wasn't something that I dreaded. But yeah, now that I think back, the devil may care me thinks like, oh, wow, that's no fair. You didn't go 3 months off. But I do remember about mid-August getting the itch to go, okay, I've got my neighborhood friends here, and that's fine, especially when you're a little kid. We had a whole different kind of world. We didn't have, play dates with people, and our moms driving us all over the place to do different activities like today. I mean, don't get me wrong. We would go, and we would go to places. We would go to the zoo, or we would go swimming at a pool, and we would do things where, but it wasn't this regular kind of schedule play dates when you were involved in all these different things, and you had these different play dates with people, and mom would drive you here, and mom would drive you there. For the most part, mom was busy at home. This is 40, 50 years ago. Let's not forget. I'm not trying to sound sexist. I'm just trying to give you a little slice of reality of what things were like 40 or 50 years ago. And so mom was busy. So it was like, you'd go out and say, okay, be back by 5 or 4:30, whenever you're going to eat. And mom didn't really know where we were. I can't even imagine how many miles I used to log on my bike, especially when I got into my, teenage years. But even before that, we used to ride bikes all over the place. And some places that if I've ever told my mom and dad where I went one a few times, you'd be like, you went where? So I do remember getting itchy to get back to school. But at the same time, what was nice about it was that, you had the choice. You could say it's nice to be. It's nice when you make the decision that you want to do something, as opposed to when you are told you have to do something. So it's kind of nice from a psychological standpoint to say, yeah, I'm getting a little restless here. I'm getting a little bored. I won't mind going back to school in a couple of weeks, as opposed to school is next week. What? What do you mean? It's still summer. Well, it doesn't matter. You go to school on August 15th. What? Then all of a sudden you're like, I'm not ready. But when you have those 2 weeks, you go, yeah, I think I'm ready. I mean, that's just human nature, right? We rather choose than be told. So I don't know. I'd love to talk to it. I don't have a kid, and I'm not really around young kids. So I'd love to know, at the end of the day, there's not much you could do. Your mom and dad say it's time to go back to school, and you can whine about it and not be happy about it, but you go. I always found that by the time I was going back to school, I was looking forward to going. Being an only child, once again, I had my group of friends in my neighborhood. But it was nice to see, even back in those days, once again, we didn't have these play days with people. You basically hung around with the people that you lived near. You went to their houses. You drove your bike down the block. You had neighborhood kids. But then when you went to school, your world opened up a little more. There were kids that were maybe a mile away that you hadn't seen all summer. And suddenly you saw them. And they were good friends in school. And the funny thing is, I had a lot of friends that, I hung around with during the summer months that lived in my neighborhood. But when I got back to school, I found that the other friends that lived farther away that I couldn't get to see regularly because they were a little far, they lived farther away or something like that. And in those days, like I said, a mile was a big deal when you were a little kid, especially. And you didn't have your parents driving you around everywhere during the day. I found that while I enjoyed my friends in the neighborhood and spent most of the summer with them, I really liked and had a better time with some of the people that I saw in school. So I looked forward to going back to school, not only because I liked school and the whole socialization. Like I said, being the only child, you like to be around people because you don't have people your age around your house. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the classes anyway. But I enjoyed the socialization too. So the getting back was kind of like, oh, cool, I get to see blank, blank, and blank, and blank, who I haven't seen all summer. But at least, once again, it was a choice rather than an edict. So I was just thinking about, wow, like, you know, wow, the kids today, they really have a shortened, they're going later. We never went into late June or mid-June. We always were out by either late May or the first or couple of days of June, but never like in the middle of the month. I was really surprised to hear that. And then going back in the middle or almost, you know, another week and a half before September to go back to school, not only does it feels a little short and a little abrupt, but it's really, I'm thinking about the realities of that now. At least here in Chicago, most schools, grammar schools especially, did not have air conditioning. Didn't need it. By the time kids came back to school in September, which is when they did, the weather was beginning to change and getting a little cooler. It might have been hot a couple of days, but by the first week of September, it was getting cooler. The weather was changing. I totally remember. Now, I don't know if this is just some misty water-colored memories or not, but I do remember. When I went back to school in September, I remember wearing a jacket. Not a coat. I mean, it wasn't crazily cold, but I remember wearing a jacket, a light jacket, because the weather was getting a little cooler. As I said before, just last week here in Chicago, most grammar schools, especially, and high schools had gone back to school, and the temperatures were record-breaking, 99, 100 with heat indexes. I can't imagine what it was like to be in some schools that didn't have air conditioning. Now, I don't know. Maybe they're refitting and retrofitting these schools with air conditioning, but there's no question that the weather is changing, and fall is not happening in terms of fall cooler weather, is not happening as early as it used to. For the most part, September seems to be an extension of summer and well into the 80s and sometimes the 90s until about maybe the last week of September, and then all of a sudden we get this abrupt change. I just wonder how that is in a learning situation. Yeah, we want to get kids back to school, okay, but you know, if it's so hot that you're distracted or that you can't pay attention, just being in school doesn't mean you're learning anything. So I'm wondering if, you know, even September can be hot, but to go back in August, wow. And I also remember, you know, like I said, I enjoyed going back to school. Part of the thing that I enjoyed was that preparation. Now, I see all on television, you know, I see all these events that they have in mid-August leading up to school where, you know, especially, and there's some, you know, underserved kind of depressed areas that a lot of charities will be giving, you know, school kids, you know, free backpacks and free supplies to get them ready for school, to get them in the groove, and so that's a great thing to do. And I do, when you see that on the news, you see the kids, and they do have smiles on their faces, and I remember that. There was a point, probably in, you know, even though didn't go back to school until after Labor Day, but there was a point, like in mid to late August, when mom was, and you'd even see the commercials, now you see them earlier, you know, the back to school sales. And I love, there was a certain day when it was like, okay, the shopping for the new clothes, I wasn't all that into, whatever. But I loved when we would be going to, whether it was Goldblatt's or Walgreens or Polk Brothers or some of these other department stores and or expanded pharmacies and Sears and all these names that are gone now. I mean, for the most part, Walgreens is still around. But you go and buy your new school supplies. And some of the things you knew you needed, right? When I was growing up, there was no such thing as a backpack was hiking. You bought that at a sports store. That was for hiking. That was not used as a school, conveyance for your supplies. No way. No backpacks in my day. In my day, we didn't have any backpacks. We had book bags, but we didn't have backpacks. We didn't wear them on our backs. We carried them over our shoulders, which wasn't a great thing to do, or sometimes even almost like a mini briefcase or something like that. But we didn't really have backpacks. And so there were some things you knew you needed, but a lot of times, too, it wasn't until like the first day of school, I remember, at least in my early days of grammar school, that now I'm sure with the internet and all the connectivity we have, I'm sure that schools send out things and say, okay, you're starting fifth grade or seventh grade or second grade, whatever it is, and here's the supplies that you will need. You know, certain kind of pencils and pens and other supplies. And I'm sure they send that out early and you get there. So first day of school, everybody's ready. My memory is such that I remember getting that list the first day. Here's what you need. You went to get, your clothes before you went to school. And I'll tell you, I went to a Catholic grammar school, so we didn't even have to go get like a lot of clothes. We just had to get a couple of variations on our school uniform. For the boys, it was dark pants and a light blue shirt. And for a while early on, I used to have to wear this little cross tie, but we used to wear button down shirts, like light blue shirts. Later, they could be almost like polo shirts. They were short sleeve shirts with the three buttons and no tie. But when I started grammar school, we had the dark pants with the light blue long sleeve shirt and the little cross tie. It wasn't a long tie. It was a little cross tie with a little white little fake pearl in the middle of it. And so you did have to go to a certain place and get that. And you got maybe two or three shirts and a couple, three pairs of pants. But it wasn't like today where you see these commercials. Now, once again, I'm sure the kids that go to public school, it's a wholly different story. You don't have uniforms. But for me, it wasn't that back-to-school shopping wasn't all that involved. It was pretty much dictated. Blue shirts and dark pants. Didn't have to worry. Didn't have to get seduced by all that stuff from Target or Old Navy and stuff like that. Just went to the uniform store. Used to actually have a uniform store, I think, because there were so many Catholic schools that there could be businesses built on that. So many kids going to Catholic schools at that time. Now those places would go out of business, and a lot of them don't even have uniforms anymore at Catholic schools. But we did. So there wasn't a lot of choice. At least for the boys. And girls were the same way. They had to wear a white shirt. They had the little skirt kind of thing, a one-piece kind of skirt thing, and then later on they could wear pants. Pants! But yeah, and their ties were red. They had a white shirt with a little red cross tie. But yeah, so we didn't have a lot of the excitement of the back-to-school clothes shopping from my childhood was not as exciting. But the back-to-school supply buying, now that was a fun day. And as I said, we didn't really get the list of supplies until the first day of school. And I do remember, and I was, you know, once again, I was always very, you know, so I was like, okay, we got the list. Let's go. Let's go the next day. I mean, I let's get everything. I want every, I, we need to get everything. And I do remember that, you know, the teacher would be like, okay, does everybody have their, and some kids would say, I didn't get it yet. You know, okay, well, you know, let, you know, can you lend Tommy some of your paste? You know, but there was like this list of what you needed based on what was going to be used, you know, in that school year for your different courses. And yeah, I mean, I do remember there was such a great feeling when at the beginning of the, I can totally remember this. You'd go to the store and they'd have, and I'm sure they do now. Once again, I'm not looking at back to school things. But they would have, you know, the aisles just stocked with all the different things. And, you know, and the list that your teacher gave was very specific, you know, a certain kind of a notebook. I remember as a little kid in first and second grade, we had these big, thick pencils because, you know, your fingers were small. You grabbed onto them easier. I guess now that I think about it, that doesn't really make much sense, does it? You would think if you had small hands, it would be easier to grab a smaller pencil. But I remember these thick pencils we used to have for some reason in first or second grade. And then, you know, there was always those number two pencils. So you bought these little pencils, then you had the pencil holder, you know, so that you had it in your desk. And it was like a plastic thing that kind of had a little compartment and you stuck all the pencils in there and your pens. Oh, I mean, the first week of school, I mean, it, you know, all of your supplies were so, it was so cool because everything was new and everything was neat and all the pencils were sharpened and, you know, your paste was full. Everything was new. It wasn't dirty. Oh, I remembered that was so great. And as the year went on, even the first couple of months, all of a sudden, you know, where's my pencil and where, oh, my paste and all, it's all, the outside of it was all crusty and, you know, but man, that first day when you came to school with your new supplies, oh, and when you bought, I don't even know if kids buy these anymore, but oh, when you used to buy, I don't know if they even make them anymore, but when you used to buy the 64 Crayola box of crayons. Remember that? Now, this had to be first or second grade. I don't think we used crayons past second or third grade. But, man, I remember having to buy the 64 box, of course, and you know this, if you are of a certain age, you know this, that not only did that box of 64 crayons have this amazing variety of colors, but what was on the back of the box? Yes, correct. The crayon sharpener. Remember that crayon sharpener, that mysterious thing that if your crayon had been, you wore it down so much that it became flat and you couldn't really write or color with it anymore, you had to peel off the little paper that was on the crayon that said the name of it, blue, red, yellow, burnt sierra. And especially in that 64 box, there was a lot of varieties there. And you peeled off the little thin paper that said Crayola on it, or crayons. You had to get the Crayola crayons, right? I mean, some people didn't. And I think they were ostracized by the community. You had to get the Crayola crayons, the green and kind of orange box, right? They had the 64, that was the longer box. They had another one that I think they had 20 some. There, the crayon, it was a little taller and skinnier. But the Crayola 64 box was long, and it just had these several rows of, oh, if you're a little kid looking at those crayons, you couldn't imagine there were any other colors in the world. They had to have been all in that box. It was a sight to see, because the usual box of crayons, a lot of times, and this is, I'm just going off of memory here because it's been many, many decades since I bought a box of crayons. I think they used to have like a box of 8 and then 16. And then I think there were like 25 or something. And then, and I'm just guessing, but definitely 64. For whatever reason, I don't know why 64, but there was 64. And, but they had that little sharpener in the back that didn't really always work, but it was cool to try it anyway. And wow, when you opened up that box of crayons on that first day of school too, or that second day after you got the list, whew, how cool was that? But I remember we had to get, you know, like a ruler. And once again, you know, I mean, a lot of kids too, they had older brothers and sisters, so they just got the hand-me-downs. But I didn't have any brothers or sisters. So, you know, especially when we started, I mean, once you got a ruler, you could probably, unless you lost it or broke it, you could probably use that ruler the next year. But, you know, sometimes you used to draw on it, you know, and you're boredom. So it's, I need a new ruler. But you'd get the ruler, and it was always that wooden ruler. Now I'm sure they're plastic, but back then we had wooden rulers, and oh, the wood was all smooth and shiny, and it was kind of, now that I think about it, the rulers that we had were a little dangerous for kids when I think about it. They had like a metal thing in them on the side in order to make, you know, the straight line. It wasn't sharp, but the corner of it was. That when I was a kid, there were so many things that were dangerous that we could, I don't know how we survived, to be honest with you. But I remember the wooden ruler had this metal piece, which today sounds unnecessary and dangerous, but we didn't care. We used it, and if we cut ourselves, we cut ourselves, and we liked it. But yeah, you get the ruler and your new box of crayons and then your Elmer's glue. You went from that's how you also knew whether you were getting older. I believe in the early grades, you started with paste because, you know, it was easier to handle as a kid. It had the little, you know, it was thicker and it had a little an applier. You dunked the thing in and you spread it on. If you had a bottle of glue and you're a little kid, it might be much harder to manipulate that, and you'd be spilling the glue all over the place. And so it was, the paste was when you were younger, and then you knew you were getting older. You knew you were getting a little more mature and a little more coordinated, because suddenly when you got that list, it didn't ask for paste. It asked for glue. Most of the time it was Elmer's glue. That was the big thing. I mean, some of those companies, I don't know what it's like today because there's so much competition, but back when I was a little kid, I mean, it seemed like everybody had, it was like there were three companies and they dominated the school supply world. There was Crayola crayons. There were some other offshoots of crayons, but as I said before, I think you were ostracized if you didn't get the Crayola box. And I think it was the same for glue. Yeah, there were a lot of glues out there, but the Elmer's glue with that cow on the front and the little orange nozzle on the top of the glue, I mean, that was standard supply. The number two pencils, yellow. They weren't colored. They weren't designed. They were yellow. With the pink eraser, everybody had them. It was it was so funny when I think back how uniform, and we literally wore uniforms, but how uniform everything was. There was not a lot of variety. Today, oh, I can only imagine if I'm talking about this, I'm actually tempted to go to a Walgreens or some kind of a Target or something like that and just see the variety of school supplies. I mean, think about it. When like even in the last 20 or 30 years, right? The Post-it note, for instance, right? The Post-it note, for whatever reason, which is one of the great inventions of our time, for whatever reason, it started as yellow, right? Yellow post-it notes. That's all they were. Now they're blue and pink and red and yellow, you know, white, everything. Several different colors. I'm sure Crayola crayons are still the leader in the crayon world, but I can't believe they're the only ones out there. In today's world, it's cooler not to have what everybody has. You know, when I was growing up, there was still this sense of acclimating and being like everyone else. Today, we're very individualized. The more you're not like somebody, the better off. But back then, it was like, oh, well, why do you have those crayons?
Ooh.
These are the ones that everybody has. I mean, I just remember everybody had Crayola crayons, Elmer's glue, yellow number two pencils. You also had to get a pair, you know, because you'd have like, then you'd have to get construction paper. Remember, do they still make construction paper? Why is it called construction paper? I know I sound like George Carlin here. Construction paper? Why is it called construction paper? You're not constructing anything. You're just you're making turkeys with your hand and gluing them. That's not a construction. Weird. No. But yeah, you bought this pack of construction paper that was this thicker paper that you mostly use for kind of like art little things. But yeah, I always had construction paper you had to get with the certain colors. And they told you which ones to get. And then, of course, if you had your construction paper, well, you had to get a pair of scissors. Do you remember the round scissors? I don't know. Once again, having never had kids, I don't know. Maybe, you know, this all sounds like, what are you talking about, Jim? Of course they do. I haven't seen these because I never had to buy them in the last 40 years. But at least in the early grades, you had to get a pair of scissors because you were going to cut your construction paper during art class. But you don't want to put these sharp scissors in the hands of little kids, right? So instead of the scissors, the regular scissors always were sharp-ended. But when you were in grammar school, at least, as a little kid, they had the rounded-edged scissors. I don't know if they were as sharp as the other ones either, but the rounded edges were there so the little kids wouldn't stab themselves potentially. So maybe that was the first time that there was a little responsibility. Most of the things that little kids played with back then were extremely dangerous. But at least they had the foresight to say, well, you don't want to give the kids sharp scissors. So they had the rounded edges. And I remember those rounded edges scissors. And I remember them not cutting very well. And I remember having a lot of them around the house. You'd bring them home then. But pretty soon those got thrown out because they didn't cut it. No pun intended. You had to have the scissors with the little points on them. But I remember getting so excited. Like I said, a little pencil case. That you had different kind of things. I never had a pocket protector, but I had a little pencil case that I remember it was plastic and it had a little lever on it kind of thing that you pushed it down and it revealed the pencils and you took it out and then you pushed that little screen up and then it closed it so the pencils wouldn't fall out. Oh, I loved that thing. Could you imagine walking around with a pencil case today? But oh my gosh, those first days of school, everything was spanking new. And then, of course, lunch boxes. Oh, I loved my lunch boxes. I think I had about four lunch boxes. And then, of course, you know, it got to be not cool, and then it was cooler to just bring a brown paper bag, man. You didn't want to have a lunchbox. By second or third grade, you didn't want to have a lunchbox. You had to be cool. You just had the little box. But I remember in first grade, I had at least three lunchboxes I can remember, and I still have one of them. I wish I had the one, and I've always been tempted. They have it on eBay, and I could buy them, but what am I going to do with it? As far as if I just saw it and go, that was cool, and then I would put it somewhere. But I had three. I had a Superman, and I'm not even really a big Superman fan, to be honest with you. But I think, you know, as a little kid, it's like, oh, well, you know, buy him the Superman one. Okay, because Superman was just popular. So I remember having that Superman lunchbox and thermos, but not really being crazy about it. The one that I have a great memory of, I have two of them, they have great memories of. Dr. Doolittle with Rex Harrison, based off the movie. I loved the Dr. Doolittle movie. And Rex Harrison with his talk singing, "If I could talk to the animals." But my favorite that I'm surprised my mom didn't keep. I don't know why she would have thrown that out, because she knew how much I loved it, and I still enjoy it. I have a little figurine. I loved the show of H&R Puffin Stuff. And so I had an H&R Puffin Stuff lunchbox, metal lunchbox, that had, you know, both sides had a different scene, and they were also like raised. It wasn't just a sticker. Those lunchboxes from the early mid, like the 60s and early 70s, they were made of tin, which probably wasn't very safe. Once again, later on, they became plastic, a little safer. But when I was a kid, people didn't care about safety for kids. So those things were tin. They had the thermos in there that was also, you know, decorated, but they were tin, and the figures or the pictures were raised a little. And I had the H&R Puffin Stuff lunchbox, and I loved it. And it's still there. It's still out there. It's like $70, $80, $90. Even more than that, because now it's even more rare. I've been tempted so many times over the last 20 or 30 years to buy it just for nostalgia's sake. Very tempted. But then the little, you know, the more practical side of me said, but really, what am I going to do with this thing? It would have a little momentary nostalgic feel. And I certainly, and believe me, I've got enough of that stuff that I've got displays around my house of stuff. So I'm surprised I never did buy it. It just seemed a little high for that nostalgia. It was always 75, 80, 90, sometimes, depending on the, you know, the condition. I mean, I wouldn't want to get one, because those things, because they were tin, you know, if they, and back then we didn't think about, oh, they're collector's items. You used them. You threw them around. So, you know, those tin things with the paint on it the cartoon was, or whatever it was, with those banana splits or whatever. Like I said, later lunchboxes became much cheaper. They were plastic. They put stickers with, you know, different things, whether it was, you know, Boo Boo Kitty or whatever. But back then they were metal, and so they would get dented, they would get scratched. So a lot of times, yes, they were on eBay for $75, but they weren't in great condition. Like a mint one was $125 or $130. And I'm like, can I really justify this? For what, you know? But there, every so often, I will go on eBay and look at that and go, oh, the H&R Puffin Stuff lunchbox. I can't believe my mom, I wonder if it broke or something, because I loved it. I used that thing every day for at least through first and second grade. And what I think is funny is that she threw out the Puffin Stuff one, but I still have the Dr. Doolittle one with the thermos. I mean, it's great. I think my mom liked the Dr. Doolittle better than the H&R Puffin Stuff, so that's why she kept it. Because I actually have some original Dr. Doolittle dolls with Rex Harrison. I was crazy about that movie. But yeah, I mean, you got your lunchbox, your new lunchbox for the new school year. At least, and now, like I said, I'm talking about between first and maybe third grade. And even around third grade, there was suddenly the cool factor, at least for boys, the cool factor started to play, to come into play. You know, before, you know, you went to school in first and second grade and everybody, you weren't really concerned about peer pressure and coolness and stuff like that. But then it became very obvious very quickly as school continued and you went from grade to grade, what was cool and what wasn't. And lunchboxes, for boys especially, were not cool. Girls could still do the lunchbox, I think, into the third or even fourth grade. But boys, that was gone. By third grade, you were cool. You were carrying your lunch to school in, you know, one of those little lunch bags, the brown lunch bags. You know, that was the cool thing. You didn't do a lunchbox anymore. But man, I have great memories of my H&R Puff and Stuff lunchbox. That's for sure. But it was the newness of the year that made it so cool. The reason I was talking about this too is that I think the going back to school experience in 2024 has to be completely different. Now, I'm waxing poetic here and talking about all these. And some of this stuff, to me, even sounds prehistoric. You know, paste and Elmer's glue and all this stuff. And lunch boxes and all this. I mean, today when I watch these little news stories, they've got backpacks and, the whole experience is different. And I think what also makes the going back to school experience difference has to be social media. And the reason that I think so is because I was talking to a woman who's got a couple of girls in grammar school, and they were going back to school. And so I had spoken to her and said, "So how was the first day of school?" And she said, "Well, I think I failed as a mom." And I said, what? And she said, "Yeah, you know, I've been so busy with work and other things. And I didn't, I mean, you know, it wasn't that she didn't get what her kids needed. Supplies, clothes, getting them to school on time. It wasn't all that stuff. That's the important thing." She actually used the phrase, "I think I failed on the first day of school as a mom." She used this phrase. And I said, "Well, what are you talking about?" And she said, "Yeah, you know, after the first day of school at night, I went online and I saw all the photos that the other moms posted of going back to school on the first day. And I was so busy, I just didn't have enough time to post pictures. And so I think I failed." And I was sad and I was mad at the same time. I said, "What?" So now we have another arbitrary measuring stick as to what it means to be a good parent, and that is how many pictures you post of your kid on the first day of school that you're going to feel inadequate. Because you didn't do a good job as a mom because you didn't post enough pictures of your kids online on the first day of school. And you're discounting the fact that you had them prepared. They had clothes. They were on time. They had their supplies. You discounted all that effort because you compared yourself to other moms online who posted pictures." And I said to her, "Stop this." I said, "First of all, you don't need to keep up with the Joneses like that, because if your kids are in fifth or sixth grade, I got news for you. all these grammar school parents that you're worried about and comparing yourself to, three quarters of them you probably will never see again because your kids aren't going to go to school with them anymore. They're going to go to another school and you won't see them. So stop trying to impress them and stop trying to compete with them. What's important is your kids are prepared for school and your kids know you love them because you're taking the time to take care of them and make sure that they're prepared for school. And she said, well, I have to say that this is a woman I'm going to play with right now. And she said, well, I do have to say that when I left for rehearsal, they said, we love you, mommy, and break a leg. And I said, that is what you need to hear. That is what you should measure whether you are a good parent or not. If your kids tell you that they love you and they appreciate you, that's your measuring stick. Not some arbitrary BS about how many pictures that you posted online because little Janie or little Timmy's, although that's not right, little Ethan's mom or little, I don't even know, what's the popular girl's name today? Little Emma's mom or little Olivia's mom or little Ethan's mom or little Landon's mom put up 58 pictures of their school, back to school, of their outfits, of what they wore on the first day and them sitting in the car and going in and walking in and blah, blah, blah. Parents have enough pressures and enough responsibility and important responsibility to raise your kids so that they become productive members of society. You don't need another measuring stick, which has nothing to do with any of that that I just talked about in terms of responsibility and maturity and preparation. Posting pictures does not equal good parenting. Being there for your kids, showing them your attention, showing them your love, showing them your concern. That's a good parent. Not posting pictures. Ugh. We didn't take pictures when we went to school the first day. And if we did, no one else saw them except our family. Maybe the first day, mom may, and back then, nobody even really had cameras. There might be, if I look through some of my pictures, oh, Jimmy's first day of school. Yeah, maybe. But it wasn't broadcast to the world. That's now a measurement of good parenting. How many first day of school pictures you post? And so I told her, I said, that's what you should cling to. That your kid said, we love you, mommy, and break a leg. Don't worry about these other people. First of all, you don't need to measure yourself against them. Secondly, they're not important to you. You're not gonna know these people in 5 years. Do what you want to do and do it right. And don't worry about the Joneses. But we're in such a competitive world because of this internet and because of this social media that she literally said, I think I failed. And I was like, what? I've never met her kids, but I could tell by the person that she is just working with over the last couple of months, there's no way she could fail as a parent. I could just see what kind of person she is. But she felt inadequate. Not because she didn't prepare her kids for school, because she didn't post enough pictures online of the first day. She's beating herself up for it. And I told her, stop that. And she said, well, thank you for that. And it's duly noted. And I said, yes. Feel good about the fact that your kid said, I love you. That's what's important. Not how many pictures you posted. So I'll tell you, I don't envy parents today. And I even wonder what the whole school experience for kids is like. You know, it was a school was a place to be with people, to socialize, to learn. There was competition, don't get me wrong, but I just think the pressures that the world and then this online world inflicts on people, the kids as well as the parents. It's hard enough. I've always said, yes, I don't have any kids, but I've always said the most important job that anybody can have if you decide to take it is to be a parent, because you are affecting other people ultimately by sending your children out into the world. We've seen what bad parenting can do. It can lead to death and violence and murder. We've seen these mass shootings. Don't worry about how many pictures you posted. Worry about the attention and the care and the concern and the love that you give your child and the instruction and the responsibility and the authority that you have to make sure that they become responsible citizens in the world. We're all counting on you to do that, because we're all living in this world. And bad parenting affects us all. Don't worry about posting pictures. Worry about creating a responsible human being that's going to go out into the world. I know that that woman's kids appreciated what she did for them on the first day of school, whether there were 100 pictures of them online or not. But we always have these misty colored memories of days gone by. And as I reflected on this, when I realized, wow, it's September 2nd. And what a difference it was. These, you know, we were just beginning school, and some kids are in school for 2 weeks. And I just got a little nostalgic. I don't know if my school days were all that perfect. We always seem to put a gloss and a positive spin on days gone by, the good old days. I'm sure there were days I didn't want to get up and go to school. I'm sure there were days that I didn't want to carry my lunchbox, even though I love my my Puff and Stuff lunchbox. There was a day where I said, there probably was a time where I said, no, my mom probably packed my lunchbox. And I said, no, I don't use a lunchbox anymore, Mom. I'm using a bag, because that ain't cool anymore. But I do have some good memories of school, and I do have those memories of those first days of school every year when you've got the new supplies and a new school year and new classes, new teachers, new kids in your class. Always fun. Always fun. But I remember, it wasn't so freaking hot in the class in September. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 432. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears.